we have journeyed a long way in 10 weeks. We've gone through the first, or tonight we'll be concluding the end of Genesis, but we've been through 11 chapters in Genesis, and like the name means beginning, and so we're going through these four big events: creation, fall, flood, and here we are at Babel. So we've seen a lot of beginnings so far. We saw in creation the beginning of the world, beginning of humans, where this was the crowning moment of creation. Saw the beginning of covenant, the beginning of marriage. In the fall, we saw beginning of sin, beginning of consequences, the beginning of a broken relationship, both with God and man and woman with each other. We also saw the beginning of redemption, the need for a savior. Yep. We saw the beginning of family in chapter 4 with Cain and Abel. We saw the beginning of murder. And then in the genealogies, we saw the beginning of physical death being recorded. It kept saying, "Auntie died, auntie died, auntie died." In the flood, we saw like a new beginning with the flood. And we saw that Noah was righteous, but he was not perfect. Sin went into the ark and sin came out of it. And this week with the story of Babel, we will continue to see more beginnings. The beginning of languages, the beginning of nations. And for me, this story just felt really personal. My last name married now is Douglas, but my maiden name is Gonzalez. So you can guess that my dad speaks Spanish. So I grew up hearing Spanish all the time. He would talk to my grandmother in Spanish, who my abuelita, that's what we called her. She's my grandmother, little grandma, because she was tiny, just like my dad. And so she really only spoke Spanish. And that's how, like, I would learn to communicate with her is Spanish. So that just played a really big role in our family growing up. My dad still speaks Spanish with his sisters. That is his first language. That's what he's most comfortable with. So we heard that in our home. I still hear it today. We lived overseas, as I've shared and shared and shared again. And so we heard Arabic, and we heard a certain dialect of Arabic called Darija. My children learned to speak the classical Arabic. They learned to kind of get by with their Darija. We learned French. They learned French, and I was sharing with my group. The only French I know is taxi cab French and restaurant French. So I know how to get to a restaurant, order, come back. So, and then seeing nations and then seeing all these different places, we got to travel. So we went to, and this is a humble brag. Let me just say that, you know, us traveling to Europe or any place we did is like crossing states here. So let me just give you that context. We went to France. We went to Italy. We went to Holland. We were so fortunate to travel. We went to the Sahara Desert. So we've seen just so many beautiful places and met so many beautiful people. And so here we come to this is like, how did that even come to be? What happened that all of these nations came, and where were people scattered, and all these questions that we're asking as we come to Genesis 10. Genesis 10 is known as the Table of Nations, and it's going to tell us where the nations are dispersed. And we see first verse, Genesis 10, these are the generations of the sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, born to them after the flood. And we are very familiar with genealogies right now. We are very familiar with this language, and we now know that we don't skip over them. They're very important. We will never skip over them again, ever, 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 right? And we've noticed now with this list of genealogies, it's a little bit different. We're not just seeing names. We're seeing cities. We're seeing some landmarks. We're seeing regions. But we are united in origin, one family. This comes from Noah. While we are united in one family, we are still divided. We see these people be divided, each with his own language, clan, land, nation. And we see that three times in verses 5, 20, and 31 of chapter 10. And so Table of Nations here is serving as a map, and it is going to show divisions, and it's going to orient the original audience to their neighbors geographically, while also warning them of some of their neighbors. And we're going to start with Japheth, who is first mentioned in 2-5. And here is just the line. I'm going to show you this. And my I just want to show you. So can you see that? Oh, we're going to cover that guy up. All right. So Japheth is mentioned first. And this is not in birth order. From the things I've read, it said that this line is probably the least significant with Israel's history. And also it's the smallest. And so that's probably why this was, he went first. And in your homework, it was like, okay, who, where are these people from? These are the Indo-European nations. And if you're like me and you hear that word, it takes me back to high school geography where I'm like, I probably should have paid more attention. And so I don't even know what they're talking about there. So don't worry, guys. We have a map. But you can see here there's 14. And remember, we learned that the number 7 is important. So we have two groups of 7. That is good to know. And so here we come to the map, and we can see that the map is also, there's another map on in your homework, in your booklet, page 167. But I liked this one. I got it from Elizabeth's Bible. And so you can see that in the black lettering are the descendants of Japheth. And so you can see where they are spreading from India to the to Western Europe. And so this will be the people group that, like, where we would find Germany. It's where Germany comes from, places in India, the Greeks, areas of Russia. So just to orient you to where that would be is there. And then we come to Ham. And these are the African and Canaanite nations. And so they're going to be in red. And then you'll see like where they disperse to after. Okay. So they're the African and Canaanite nations. And that's where we see Africa, Ethiopia. And remember, I think she put in there that Egypt is Mizraim right there. That's Egypt. And Put is Libya. And you know, if you were reading this week, you will notice that there was special attention here to Nimrod. And we now know that when there is a little bit of a stray from how the natural order, and so Nimrod is mentioned, and then Moses is going to kind of talk about him. And three times he refers to him as mighty. And now we might think, oh, that must have mean he was really great. Well, but we know from Genesis 6 that that word mighty men was not used in a great way. It was used of the Nephilim, who were mighty men. And so what we can take from Nimrod and from this context is that him being a mighty man, he was a tyrant. He was an arrogant tyrant, and he was defiant in the face of the Lord. And it said that he was a hunter, a mighty hunter. Well, he most likely did not just hunt animals. He was hunting people. And that he gets a lot of special attention here because his descendants settle in Babylon, and it represents complete rebellion against God, and we will see that in the next chapter. We will learn more about that. And then he goes on to conquer what? Assyria. He finds Assyria. That should be on there too. And now when we hear these words, Babylon and Assyria, these are important places because they become two great empires. And they force the Israelites into captivity. If you were in our Hosea study last year, you would remember this. Remember, Hosea was writing, he was writing to the northern kingdom, and he was warning them, and he was saying, return, return, return to the Lord, return to the Lord. And then there are parts where he was writing to Judah, and it was like, return. And what he's warning them of is this captivity that ends up happening, this prophecy that is fulfilled. And so the northern kingdom is invaded, and they go off in captivity into Assyria. And then the southern kingdom, the Babylonians invade, and then they get carried off into Babylon. And this is also, we see, you see down the line, Philistines are mentioned. Okay, that is also like, if we know the story of David and Goliath, bad news bears, he's fighting Goliath, who is a Philistine, and also Nineveh. Nineveh, we know this, we might be familiar with the story of Jonah, and he's not wanting to go there for a reason. So this is like bad news. These people are not great. And this is from the line of Ham. And then we go down further, and we see the line of Canaan. And I'm going to show you this only because I really want to point out all these ites. Can you see him? Yeah, right there. Don't look over here. I don't trust you guys. I don't trust you. I'm just going to do that. I don't trust you as far as I can throw you. So And we saw in our, I'm fixing it, ladies. Oh my gosh, I have so many type A's in here going crazy right now. So you did in your homework and you knew like these were mentioned, you know, in Leviticus 18, we see these people, they're not great people. And when they're mentioned over and over again, do you know they're mentioned 19 times in the Old Testament? This group, these Ites, descendants of Canaan, remember the curse on Ham's son, Canaan? This is who it's talking to. And so this group is mentioned. And when it's mentioned, the Lord is saying, drive them out. You made that list. What are they supposed to do? Crush their towers, conquer them completely, all the things. And we learned about just how bad they were. I'm not going to repeat all those things out loud, but you read it, right? And so God is warning them, and he's warning them of their neighbors. And Moses is writing, right? And they're about where we are right here, you know, where Moses is writing them. And he's saying, like, look out for these people. This is the land you're going into. And so this is going to be a map for them, a map of warning, and also just letting them know where their people are, and a reminder, you need to get rid of these people. Also, we'll see in that same list of Canaan, we see the mention of Sodom and Gomorrah. We're going to study that more next semester, but that rings a bell for a lot of us. We know what happened there. A lot of sexual immorality, so much so that the Lord destroys it. And then even it mentions the other cities next to it, Adma and, I don't have it written down, but Zeboim, that's it. And we heard those names in Hosea. That's what this is, the Lord was referring to these same cities. So the genealogy right here, it's focusing on Canaan and from the line of Ham. And then it moves on to Shem. And this one looks a little different. Here, I'm just going to do that there. And so we come to Shem, and we saw in our homework that this is where the Semites come. And if you've heard the term anti-Semitic, people who are against the Jews. So we see the Semites, and it's another name for the Jewish people. And this is the Middle Eastern, the Persian nations. And so you saw in your, when you were reading this section, we see Shem, and all of this is listed here. And we get to Peleg, and it says where it talks about, and this is when the nation was divided, or when it was divided. This is when Babel took place. This is when there was the division. And so, but we'll recognize that that's where it stops. And so only one line of Shem is followed. The name Eber is said three times. And so again, we're going to pay attention to these things. We're going to pay attention. Why is this name being repeated? Well, it is because this is said to have believed to be the root word Hebrew. The Hebrew people, the Hebrew nation, this is where we get that word. You learn something new every day. I didn't know this. I learned that this week. So we see division with this name Peleg, and we'll see it in the chapter following. But we need to know that division will bring redemption. It will bring redemption. We're going to see this clearly when we pick back up in the middle of chapter 11, and we follow the other line of Shem. So I'm going to give you guys this map just so you can kind of be oriented with that a little bit more. And then in verse 32, it says, these are the clans of Noah, the sons of Noah, according to their genealogies in their nations and from the nations spread abroad on the earth after the flood. They spread against their will. Again, we're going to get to that in just a minute. But it just shows us that God's plans and his purposes, they're going to happen. He will see it through. And so looking at these nations, when we saw if we were to count all the names, we would get to 70. We'd get to 70. And so when we see multiple of 7 and 10, that is significant because the number 7 is perfection, 10 is completeness. So God is communicating something here. They show perfect completeness. It's going to symbolize perfect spiritual order. God knew what he was doing, very specific with these nations, even though when we read the next story, it just feels random. It's not. The Lord is so purposeful. And so we see these, there's going to be 70 nations, and we'll see this number again when we study next semester. It's going to be the number when Jacob goes to Egypt. There's going to be 70 from his family that go, 70 men. And we see it in the gospel. Jesus sends out 70 in Luke 10. He sends out 70. And why is he doing that? He's saying, go tell them about me. Go take my name. They're being his ambassadors. They're like, just as we are to be God's image going forth, that's what he was saying to do. He was telling them to do. And this just reminded me of the Great Commission. It reminded me of Matthew 28:18, where Jesus is telling us, go and make disciples of the nations. And it's interesting because here I'm not telling you guys to go move overseas and go be missionaries and all of that. I think what Jesus is making very clear is the nations are invited in. They are invited in and they are to hear about me. This is an invitation for all. And I think for us, I mean, he's saying go. So just as he's sending them out, he's sending us out and he's saying go. And we don't even have to go far, ladies. We really don't. This is so applicable. It's our neighbor. It's our children. It's our children's teacher. It's our friend. It's our professor. I don't know. I just want you to pray and think about who the Lord is putting on your heart, where he is sending you to go, so that you can share the good news. Okay, so now is like just this weird part of like, whatever came of that blessing? Whatever happened? Like, Noah spoke these words. It was really weird after the flood. And then some things happened. And then he says this. And what is going on? So I'm just going to read where he speaks the blessing and the curse. It's in 9:25 to 27. Cursed be Canaan, a servant of servants, which means the lowest of servants. He shall be to his brothers. And he said, blessed be the Lord, the God of Shem. Let Canaan be his servant. May God enlarge Japheth and let him dwell in the tents of Shem and let Canaan be his servant. So where do we see the curse on Canaan? We see this when the Canaanites are driven out of the promised land and they're conquered. Remember, we had just talked about that. So that's where we would see it then. Some commentaries I read talked about, you know, I had just said that the southern kingdom, Judah, is conquered by the Babylonians. Well, then the Persians come in and conquer the Babylonians and the Greeks and Rome, you know. And so they also come in, and they're coming in from up here, from the north. So then moving on to the blessing on Shem. Well, it is through Shem that the Messiah will come. It is through that seed, and that's in Genesis 3:15. And we'll talk more about that in the next set of genealogies. So where is this blessing on Japheth, where they are going to dwell in the tents of Shem? And what that means is honored guests. They are to share the wealth of Shem. And if we were to back up and take a wide angle view on the story of redemption, we don't see this fulfilled until the New Testament. The gospel goes first to the Jews and then to the Gentiles. And the early church, Paul goes where? To the Gentiles. Remember, he gets really mad at the Jews and he's like, y'all aren't listening to me. I'm out of here. I'm going to the Gentiles. That's what he does. And when he does that and he takes the gospel to them, that is them dwelling in the tents of Shem. They are invited to partake in salvation. So that is, I might just leave that up there. And so now we go from there and we move on to the Tower of Babel, the city with the tower. And this is going to explain why. Why did God scatter his people? So now the whole earth had one language and the same words. And as people migrated from the east, they found a plain on the land of Shinar and settled there. And they said to one another, come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens, and let us make a name for ourselves. Otherwise, we will be scattered over the face of the whole earth. So we see, you know, here it's, well, there was one language. We just read about different languages. So this isn't in chronological order. He's telling us where the nations went, and now he's telling us why and how. And he's going back and he's showing us this is where the beginning of diversity happened. We see some echoes of early Genesis here. I don't know if you caught on to that. The first part of from the east, they're migrating from the east. And we remember from Adam and Eve, when they were sent out of the garden, they were sent east. When Cain was sent out, He was sent to the east. So this should let us know that it's like a moving away from God. It's moving away. It's being separated. And that's what's happening. And then this echo of let us, you know, and you saw that in your homework. God used that in creating man. Man is using that in creating the city and the tower. God is saying this about his image bearers, and his image bearers are saying this about themselves. They're reflecting themselves. And as a community, their goal is to build a city, it's to build a tower with its top to the heavens, it's to make a name for themselves, and it's to avoid being scattered. And the first two correspond to the next two. So the city and the tower are an outward expression of inward sin. And we saw this, right? We saw this same thing with Cain. We saw that Cain's inward sin, we saw that expressed in his offering or lack of. And we see it here, and we see that the building of a city is to avoid being scattered. And now we remember, what did God say twice? He said it in Genesis 1, to the man and woman, and then he said it to Noah, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Well, they're not doing that. They're clustering. They're together. And so what this is doing is it's providing just a false sense of security. And it's just like revealing this heart of just like, I just want to be really comfortable, right? I just want everything to be the same. I want it to be comfortable. It's a false sense of security, and it's fear. It's a fear of the unknown. Can anybody relate to that? Yeah, the fear of the unknown. I don't know what's going to happen if we go over there, and if we go here, let's just stay together. And the building of a tower with its top to the heavens so they can make a name for themselves, right? So their motive here is to claim the place of God. It's to claim the place of God. And this tower is going to give them a name for themselves, an identity apart from God. We were never made for an identity apart from God. We are his image bearers. He is where we find our identity. And so this tower is a picture of pride and autonomy of these people. And we were talking about this in our group. It's just such a good reflection. What is your city? What is your tower? Where is your city? The place where you find false sense of comfort or security or control. What is your tower? The place where you're building your significance or showing your abilities. I think a big one right now is social media. Right? We're all about platforms and influencers and likes and follows. And I'm not saying that's bad. I'm talking about the heart behind it. What is your heart behind that post? What is your heart behind those things? Are you honoring God? You know, just that's just a reflection piece. And I'll tell you, for myself, years ago before we moved overseas, one of my places was like my home and wanting things a certain way. And that's not bad. I'm not saying that's bad, but my heart with that was bad. And my identity could have been found in my house looks a certain way. It looks a certain way on the outside. It looks a certain way on the inside. And when I go here, I need to buy this. And when I go there, I'm going to buy this. And when people come, they're going to be like, ah, look at your house, you know? And then the Lord scattered me. He scattered me to Morocco where I could not buy anything. And it was just a humbling, right? And where I legit had to buy my furniture off of people who were moving. And so it was just like the tower fell, guys. It fell hard and it fell fast. And so I just learned, just like really, you know, simplifying my life. And when I invite people into my home, it's about like just loving them and them leaving feeling better about God, not better about me or my house. That's just my little confession. And I liked this quote. God's will for all mankind is not that we find joy in being praised, but that we find joy in knowing and praising him. His will is not that we find security in cities, but in God whom we gladly obey. And so then we get to the consequence part. This is how God scattered them. The scattering comes when he mixes their language, right? He confuses their language. And what's funny to me is like, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense to mix language, because think about it. If language is an audible expression of our emotions, our thoughts, our will, then it's like, hey, I'm going to tell you and let's go do this and da da da. And that's what they're doing. So God's like, nope, I'm going to mix this up. And I relate to this because of where we lived. And it's funny because all the expats, like all of us Americans living abroad, knew, hey, you people who speak English go to McDonald's. And so when I wanted to find somebody who spoke my language, that's where I went. And I tell you, it happened every time. My ear was always in tune for somebody who spoke English because I wanted to talk to them. And that's where I met one of my dear friends. Actually, her husband came up to me and said, "You're speaking English. You have babies. Do you stay home with them?" And we became fast friends because we spoke the same language. So there is such wisdom in this, right? And so the Lord is like, nope, they're communicating and, you know, look what they're constructing. And so He confuses their language. And then it says he dispersed them all over the earth and they left the building of the city. Therefore, its name was Babel, which means confusion, because the Lord confused the language of all the earth and he dispersed them over the earth. God ensures that he will do what he told them to do that they did not do. His plans and purposes will be accomplished. But here's what's cool is this is not the end of Babel. This is not the end. This confusion doesn't have the final word. If you fast forward to Acts chapter 2 at Pentecost, Babel begins to become undone. Here is a picture. We see humble people bow down to God, united in prayer. God comes down not to discipline, but to empower them. And the outpouring of the Spirit brings clarity, not confusion. Each nation represented in Jerusalem was able to hear the gospel in their own language. And here in Pentecost, God does not stop their work, but he begins a new work. It's the work of testifying to Jesus and the building up of the church. So it is an undoing of what occurred at Babel. There is now spiritual union in the gospel, spiritual union that all nations become a family. We are all united in Christ. Colossians 3, it talks about there's no longer slave or free or Jew or Gentile or Greek. We are all one in Christ. So this is a spiritual undoing. We are one family. And we'll see this even further in Revelation 7, the book nobody ever wants to go to. It says, after this, I looked, this is John speaking, and there was a vast multitude from every nation, tribe, and people, and language which no one could number, standing before the throne and before the Lamb, and they were clothed in white robes with palm branches in hand, and they cried out in a loud voice, salvation belongs to our God who is seated on the throne and to the Lamb. And this was from a multitude of every nation, tribe, and people. Y'all, that is a picture of heaven, and it's beautiful. It is beautiful. So the sin of Babel leads to the multiplying of languages that ends with the praise of Christ from every language on earth. And here's the good news, guys, is that this is not the end of early Genesis. If it was, this would be like a super sad ending at Babel, and y'all would probably never come back to Bible study. So so the author knew what he was doing, right? He sandwiched Babel in between these two genealogies, and this is just the really, really cool part. We get to the line of Shem. Right here. And remember we said Eber meant Hebrew. And so we get to this line and we notice that this genealogy also looks a little different. It looks different because it's, unlike the genealogy in Genesis 6, Genesis 5, when Karen was up here and we kept saying, and he died, and he died, and he died. We do not see that word death here. We see lived. We see lived and we see expansion. We see it's talking about more sons and he begot. So this is pointing us towards hope. It's pointing us towards hope. And in his grace, God points towards hope with a man named Abram. With this man, Abram. And it is a man who would receive a promise from God that he would be the father of many nations. This is who God's going to choose. This is the nation that God's going to choose. And he's going to be the father of many nations. But then we just read in verse 30, but what, his wife is barren. His wife is barren. So how is this man going to be a father of nations? How will this promise play out? What other obstacles is Abram going to face? How is his faith challenged? What part of this story intersects with ours? Ladies, this first 11 chapters has only set the stage for what is going to come next. And we invite you back in January as we discover the answers to these questions and so much more. We're going to finish out tonight with worship. Emily McCants, so graciously, generously using her gifts up here. We just thought this would be a special time just to kind of, as we've just journeyed through, just to worship the Lord and kind of just use this time to do that. I don't know about you guys, but I read a lot of hard things in here. As much as I don't want to relate to those hard places of Cain and of even these people in Babel, I see my own sin, and gosh, I have just spent the last couple weeks repenting and reflecting and doing more repenting. So I know it's been heavy, but you guys, we're going to be moving forward, and it's going to be really great. And I am just so grateful that y'all have been here, that y'all have stuck through it. I'm just really, really blessed by you guys, and I'm grateful.